Kildare Focus with Owen Beattie.
Yes, good afternoon. Welcome to Kildare Focus with myself, Owen Beattie. We're here until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Lots to come on the programme. In a few moments' time, we'll be talking to the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission as one in three consumers plan on borrowing in order to fund Christmas spending. Then we'll be chatting to the Irish Council for International Students, many international students reporting experiencing racism while studying here in Ireland, but lack the trust in the authorities to report it, according to new research. Support meetings for bereaved parents in Kildare and the surrounding counties taking place in Wicklow and in Dublin in the lead up to Christmas. The number of recorded incidents of stalking, harassment and threats have more than doubled in a year. We'll chat to the Cork Sexual Violence Centre on that. And creative Mehel Rathangan are hosting an intercultural walking and drawing event along the Blue Way at Rathangan Bridge on Sunday. As always, get in touch with the programme. We'd love to hear from you. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97. That's in association with the Whitewater Shopping Centre. You can email studio at kfmradio.com or also give us a call on 045 898 999. Well, new research by the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission, the CCPC, on Christmas spending and finances has shown that consumers expect to spend an average of almost €1,000 this year. And it's no surprise that households with children plan to spend up to 80% more than compared to those without. Well, to discuss this, joining me on the line now is Gráinne Griffin. She's Director of Communications with the CCPC. Gráinne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yesterday I was talking to Gerard Brady from IBEC and we were chatting about all these pent-up savings that we've been talking about over the last 18 months during COVID-19, and it seems now that we're ready to spend all this money.
It does seem that in many cases consumers are going to be reaching into their savings accounts to fund Christmas. So when we went out and asked consumers, you know, what are you planning on spending? How are you planning on spending it? Like, two out of three are saying they're going to use their savings. And that's a really good thing, because in all of the work that we've done around financial well-being and financial resilience, we really identified having that kind of pot of short-term savings that you can dip into for expenses like Christmas and then replenish afterwards. It's one of the key ways of really building up your financial resilience and just improving your overall financial well-being. So I suppose that's a real positive. What we did see, though, is that for the one in three who are going to borrow, some of those people actually do have savings. And what we'd be saying to those people is, okay, look, maybe you've put it away. It's for a rainy day. You don't want to touch it. Maybe consider if now is the kind of time where maybe you should dip into it and then replenish it in the new year. Like, in some cases, people will face penalties if it's a long-term savings account and they want to withdraw money. And so we wouldn't be suggesting that you incur penalties. Mm. But if you do just have savings that are in a standard savings account, using them for Christmas and replenishing them afterwards can be so much cheaper than taking out credit over the Christmas period. Because when we ask people, okay, so you are going to borrow, what is it that you're going to use? The top of the list was credit cards, and that is just a really, really expensive form of credit. One of the most expensive out there, in fact.
Yeah, some of the other forms of credit include taking a loan out from the bank or the credit union, store finance, or a loan from a money lender, which we've covered on this programme before, and that comes with its own problems. But this thing of buy now, pay later, Gráinne, tell me a bit about that.
So buy now, pay later, I suppose, it's store finance. And so people might be familiar with it as in maybe when you're buying like white goods or a couch or something like that, a big kind of expense. You know, it's quite traditional that people might take store finance from the store and pay it back over a longer period of time. What we've seen in the last year is the introduction of store finance for much, much smaller purchases and really on online purchases. So you've seen kind of the likes of Klarna, companies like that, entering into the market. And now maybe if you're going online and maybe you want to buy a Christmas jumper, it wouldn't be unusual for you to be offered the option of paying for that with a buy now, pay later. So buy now, pay later is basically you're taking out credit. Now you are taking out credit and they offer you a set payment plan, perhaps maybe paying something over 3 months, 33% each time. That would be quite typical. And it can be very easy and it can be very appealing and it's right there when you get to the checkout. But what we would really be saying to people is just take a moment and say, was I actually planning on using buy now, pay later? Like, do I have the money in my current account? Because in that case, I can just pay for it, own it, and I don't run the risk of anything going wrong. Once you take out credit, you run the risk of missing payments. You know, maybe you changed your mind and sent something back, but it didn't arrive. All of these kind of things that can go wrong come into play, and they all run the risk of penalties financially and also potentially harming your credit rating in the long run. So look, it's there. Our research shows that like there's not very high numbers of consumers who are actually like factoring it into their spending plans for Christmas. But what we are seeing is that where consumers have already started to use buy now, pay later or other store finance methods, then they're much, much more likely to say, yes, I'm going to use that for my Christmas spending.
There is a lot of
35% of people who said, I've already used store finance, they expect to continue using it to cover Christmas costs.
I was going to say, there is a lot of support out there for people as well in terms of if you are in financial difficulty, such as MABS, etc., and we'll give out those numbers shortly. I touched on the average Christmas spend in the intro there, Grainne, €1,000. Those with children expected to pay 80% more compared to those without, and that comes down to spending again. But it can be quite a stressful time for parents in particular around Christmas, Grainne. So I suppose the advice there is just not to panic and to take a look at what options are there for you.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Like, don't panic and really try and maybe take a moment to yourself to sit down and focus and go, okay, right, what is it I actually have to get and what do I definitely want to buy before Christmas? How much am I planning on spending? Add that up and go, okay, right, that's how much I know I want to spend. Do I have it? And do I need to take out credit? And if I need to take out credit, what are my options? What's the most affordable way for me to go about it? And I suppose that list thing, I mean, we're all familiar with the Christmas list, but it really is, it's crucial, because otherwise it's so easy to go in and, you know, get distracted by things on sale or, you know, just end up impulse buying maybe and not getting the best value for your money or what you really hoped to get for your spend over Christmas. And of course, then, you know, in the new year, all of these bills, or potentially even before Christmas, all of these bills will fall due. And that's something that we need to be aware of from the outset.
Great stuff. Well, Grainne Griffin, the Director of Communications with the Consumer or Competition and Consumer Protection Commission, the CCPC. Thanks indeed for joining us on the programme this afternoon, Grainne. And you can get more details on the CCPC website. And also, I mentioned MABS there in terms of, you know, if you want to get a loan or borrow or whatever, to go through somebody who is or an organisation who's reputable, and the Money Advice and Budgeting Service. They have a number of offices around the country. Here in Kildare, there are two, one in Newbridge and one in Kilcock. The number for Newbridge is 0818 072 600. That is 0818 072 600. And then in terms of Kilcock, the number is 0818 072 590. 072 590. And if you missed those numbers, just give us a call here in KFM and we will pass on the details to you. And those numbers here, 045 898 999. Now, many international students report experiencing racism while studying here, but lack the trust in the authorities to report it. That's according to new research. 4 out of 10 or 40% of international higher education students taking part in a major survey report experiencing racism here, either as a victim themselves or by witnessing it. Now, Laura Harmon is Executive Director of the Irish Council for International Students, and she's on the line now. Laura, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Tell us a little bit about this survey then, and we'll get into the details and the findings shortly, but where did this come about and the idea for it come from?
Yeah, so we wanted to survey international students, I suppose, coming out of the pandemic, well, even though we're still very much in the pandemic, but to see how it had really affected them over the last year. But part of that study threw up some, you know, quite alarming, I suppose, statistics in relation to other issues like racism and mental health. So the study was conducted with over 760 students from over 70 countries that are currently studying in Ireland, and we had two focus groups as well, and it looked at students in higher education institutions and English language students as well. And I suppose just to give you a little bit of context, so we have about 25,000 international students studying in Ireland at the minute, and we also have one of the highest amounts of English language students in the world, you know, per head of population. And with Brexit now, you know, there's more and more coming here because we're the only English language speaking country in the EU. So one of the issues, I suppose, that came out that you mentioned there in terms of racism was quite alarming. So 40% of respondents said that they had either witnessed or experienced racism themselves, with only 5% of them reporting it to authorities. And, you know, some of the reasons that they gave as to why they didn't report was because they didn't think that action would be taken by the Gardaí, or they didn't know how to report. And also there's language barriers. So for English language students, you know, in particular, there can be barriers there in actually reporting. And these incidents happened, you know, they could have been on campus, many saying that they happened on public transport or in the streets. You know, some of them were verbal, some of them were physical. They reported having things like eggs thrown at them. So really, this is something that, you know, ICOS feels needs to be addressed. I mean, we need to have proper protocols and policies in place in colleges when it comes to reporting for students so that they know where to go. I think there needs to be more communication between the guards and higher education institutions in terms of, you know, reporting these issues and ensuring that, you know, students are familiar with the guards, that they know how to report. Because international students, obviously, they come from different cultures. So, you know, policing can be very different in different countries. And we also need hate crime legislation. You know, I mean, that's still coming through, and we need to ensure that the National Action Plan on Racism, you know, includes things like international students as well as part of it. So, you know, ICOS will certainly be engaging with public representatives around this issue. This certainly isn't a report that's going to sit on a shelf. We're very keen to lobby our public reps on this and ensure that action is taken. And it is our intention to run this survey every year. We were lucky this year we had funding from the National Forum for the Enhancement of Teaching and Learning to run this survey. But we feel it's a really valuable piece of evidence that will, you know, kind of gives us a snapshot, I suppose, as to how these students, how they have finding their experience in Ireland. And it wasn't all doom and gloom, I suppose, just to say that. I mean, many reported the great quality of education that we have in this country, you know, the amount of work that staff do to support their students, you know, within colleges. So it's really important, I think, to say that as well.
Yeah.
And I suppose Laura,
I was just going to pick up there. Almost 80% of the students taking part said that their mental health suffered as a result of the pandemic, with many citing the experiences of isolation, depression and anxiety, as well as difficulties accessing adequate mental health support. And sometimes we don't think about that is, you know, while we were going through the pandemic here, there were people living here in Ireland or students who were overseas here that couldn't get home for quite a while. So that would have been a very isolating time. And then if you throw in this type of racism that they're experiencing too, it would have led to very, very damaging mental health.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, if you can only imagine, you know, a student being alone in their room, if they're self-isolating, for example, and obviously, you know, flights were grounded, so many of them couldn't go home. You know, they might have been stuck here. They didn't have, you know, many friends here. They're away from family, and, they, you know, throw language barriers on top of that then and other issues that they're experiencing. So it is really important that we're aware of that and that the services and colleges reflect that. And I think we need to ensure that those services are diverse. I mean, I know Minister Simon Harris invested, you know, extra funding recently, $5 million in mental health supports in higher education institutions. But I mean, that's really a drop in the water. You know, we really need to ensure that these students get the supports that they need, and English language students as well in particular. I mean, a lot of them are working in frontline services. They're very much contributing to the economy here. I mean, it's estimated that international students bring about $1.5 billion per year to this economy, you know, in terms of not just the fees they pay, but obviously they're working here. They're consumers as well, and they add to the education experience for all, making it more multicultural. So they're a really valuable, you know, part of this country, part of our education system. It's really important we have the supports in place then to support them.
And that's a very high figure, though, then, that 4 in 10 or 40% are experiencing racism. I think that's an important point that you make there, and one that should be picked up, because I think, do we need maybe a change of mindset within the country here to just realise how much these people are contributing to the economy, to the growth as a country? Because we have to remember that we go abroad as well, and our students here go abroad, whether it's on an Erasmus for a year, whether it's on a J1 over to America. So you know, there's often that mindset of what are they doing here? They're taking the jobs, they're taking whatever, but that's not the case. And we do the same.
Absolutely. And I mean, look, we would want any student that comes here to be treated in the same way that we'd want our students going abroad, you know, to be treated as well. And I suppose just to make the point, I mean, look, racism is definitely not unique to Ireland. This is something that happens in other countries as well. But I think that, you know, the findings from this report now give us a good opportunity to actually work towards stamping this out. And I mean, the Gardaí are there, and actually, you know, ICOS will be engaging with An Garda Síochána in relation to these issues. We actually had someone reach out to us yesterday when we launched the report, so we will be discussing it with them. We will be putting forward, you know, our proposals and how they can be more inclusive and receptive to these matters as well. And also just to reference, I suppose, you know, ICOS is a member of the Irish Network Against Racism, and they have the ireport.ie tool where people can report racist incidents, and they also compile an annual you know, report on that they give to the authorities. So there are other ways to report, and it'd be worth anybody who's listening to check that out as well if they do feel that they want to report, you know, in another way. That ireport.ie is there as well.
Yeah, I think it's a very important bit of research that's being carried out by the Irish Council for International Students. And as you say, Laura, it's something that's going to be carried out on an annual basis, hopefully, going forward. And we look forward to working with you on that. That is Laura Harmon, Executive Director for the Irish Council for International Students. Thanks, Laura.
Kildare Focus with Owen Beattie.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. Can email studio at kfmradio.com. Now, as 2021 comes to a close and Christmas approaches, bereaved parents are forefront of the minds of those working in the charity Annam Cora. Throughout the month of December, they will continue to hold their face-to-face meetings nationwide. And Sharon Vard is the founder and CEO of Annam Cora, and she joins us on the line now. Sharon, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Owen. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Listen, before we talk about some of the events and meetings that you're having around the locality in the next couple of weeks, tell us a little bit about Annam Cora, how the whole idea came about and what you do.
Okay, Owen. Yes, we're a national organisation that provides support services, information, resources to bereaved parents after the death of a child of any age. So it could be a small child all the way through to an adult child. I think at Annam Cora, we, you know, which was founded by bereaved parents, understands only too well, you know, that your child, you know, it's not the natural order of life for your child to die, you know, before you, even if that is an adult child.
And as we know, coming up to Christmas, it's a time that people would spend with family and friends, and it can be, while a very joyous time for a lot of people, it can be difficult for others. So I'm assuming that's now why you're holding these meetings around the place over the coming weeks.
Right, yes. Yeah. So what we have, Owen, is we have both online and face-to-face meetings throughout the country, just to offer support to bereaved parents at this time. And we're also running a webinar that has been running for the last 4 weeks, and it will be finishing up next week. So, yeah, what we try to do is get information, resources, and I suppose most importantly, let parents know that they're not alone, that there are other parents out there. They're online, they're meeting face-to-face now, obviously in limited circumstances, you know, with the pandemic, but you know, the services is there, and for parents just to get in touch.
You mentioned a word there, Sharon, that I think is very important, and it's alone, and it's worth pointing out that these parents are not alone, and while they may feel like it, a lot of people have been through similar situations or similar tragedies, so to speak, and it's about gathering around those people and offering support, peer-led and also through professionals too.
That's right. Yeah. So each of our groups would have both the online groups and the face-to-face own would have professional facilitators. But most importantly, there are other parents there, all at different stages on their journey. And in fairness, our volunteer parents, they're like myself, they're, you know, further on. So we're there to just give parents some sense of hope that they're going to get through this time. And this time, like December, Christmas, can be a very lonely time for people. But, you know, throughout the 12 months of the year, you know, when your child dies, it is one of the loneliest places you'll ever find yourself in.
And Annam Cora was set up back in 2008, but I'm sure this year, and particularly the last 18 months, has been very, very difficult, because those in-person meetings would have been limited and for a while, I'm sure, didn't happen at all. Did you find it difficult then adapting to online?
Well, I think no one is more surprised than we are how well we adapted, because we went from, like that, as you say, a face-to-face service to an online service. So we had, you know, the online groups, and then we had, for parents who maybe weren't comfortable online, one-to-one support calls. And then we took the major leap of doing the webinars, and we did bereavement information evenings online, and they've been hugely successful. So we're delighted. And then in January now, 2022, we'll be launching a series of podcasts. So, you know, we've really embraced, as I said, I'm a bit of a dinosaur when it comes to anything IT, but, you know, we are really pleased that we were able to, you know, reach parents in this very, you know, the last, you know, 2 years now, coming up to 2 years, has been very difficult. But we are delighted that we have responded and responded really well.
In terms of in-person meetings, then, just tell us about some of those that are happening around us here in Kildare.
Well, probably the closest one, and a lot of parents would come in from Kildare too, is the one that's taking place. It's next Monday, the 13th of December, and that's taking place in the Maldron Hotel here in Talla. So it starts at 7:30. Now, unfortunately, because of the pandemic, we do have to restrict our numbers. So what we would say to any parents thinking of coming is to contact us, you know, give us a call, and we will be able to give you more details and get you registered for the meeting and the whole lot. But it is taking place, and there will also be an online meeting. And to be honest, the beauty about online, it doesn't matter where you live in Ireland, you know what I mean? You can go online, you know, as I said, what unites us all is that we've all experienced the death of a child, you know, through different circumstances and different ages, but that's what connects us all. So, you know, there will be online groups as well taking place for any parents that would prefer to go online at this time.
So that's in the Maldron Hotel next Monday in Talla, and then the following Monday on the 20th of December, there's another meeting taking place in the Parkview Hotel in Newtown Mount Kennedy in County Wicklow, and that's at 7:15. Again, as Sharon said, registration there is essential to attend those meetings. Just before we let you go, Sharon, if anybody listening here wants support, wants to reach out, how can they get in touch with Anam Cara?
Well, I would first say to them, go to our website, anamcara.ie, that's anamcara.ie, or they can call us on 01-404-5378. We can send out an information pack. So this is, again, you know, to all your listeners, whether they're bereaved or not, they may know someone who's bereaved, whose son or daughter has died. You know, if they contact us, we can send them out an information pack that they can give to those parents, those families. But the main thing is get in touch with us, and then we can you know, tell you about all our support services, both online and face to face.
Yeah, that number again is 01404 5378. You can also email info@anamcara.ie, and if you didn't quite catch that and you want it again, just give us a call here in the studio and we'd be more than happy to give it out to you. Sharon, I think you do great work, fantastic charity, I have to say. I'm familiar with the work you've been doing now for a number of years, so well done to you and all the volunteers there, and hope you have a great Christmas. That is Sharon Vard, CEO and founder of Anam Cara. Thanks, Sharon. Now moving on, and the number of recorded incidents of stalking, harassment and threats have more than doubled in a year, according to New Garda figures. The news comes as a major national survey is launched to gather for the first time detailed information on stalking and harassment experiences here in Ireland. Mary Crilly is the head of the Cork Sexual Violence Centre, and she joins us now. Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Thank you for having me on.
Tell me a little bit first of all about your reaction or your initial response to these Garda figures, to see that incidents of stalking, as I mentioned there, have doubled over the last year. It's cause for concern, surely.
Well, I kind of welcome it, which might seem a strange thing, but I know in Cork we have been highlighting the whole issue of stalking over the past year or so, with Una Ring and Eve McDowell, like, who would have come up publicly and talked about their own experience, and then the centre was backing the whole stuff on stalking, the whole information, the website, everything. So at this stage we decided to really look at the prevalence of stalking in Ireland, and we set up a website called stalkinginireland.ie to look at the prevalence, because what happened with the Joint Policing Committee the other day was that figures came out that there was an increase from 13 last year to 30 this year. So I think just people are more reporting, or people are becoming more aware this is a problem and I don't have to hide it, because I think far too long women and men who are stalked minimise it, or think I'm making a deal out of it, or I can't go to the guards with this, or what do people think of me, or, you know, no harm done, or they minimise all this kind of stuff. So what we're trying to do is kind of say it is an issue, it is a problem, it is very frightening for people, and we need to do something about it. So the first thing we decided to do was get together with UCC to create a survey, to put it through their ethics committee to make sure everything was above board, and then to bring the centre here on board as backing support if anybody was triggered by something that they did in the survey. So everything is put in place before we launch the survey, and we're launching the survey now this week. And we would ask and really ask people to fill in the survey, to complete it, because all we want to do is gather information. It's anonymous, so you're not kind of signing up for anything. You won't be receiving other emails. It's really just to look at the prevalence of stalking in Ireland.
We'll talk more about the survey in a moment, Mary, but I just want to go back to stalking and harassment. And this might seem like a very simple question, but what would you define, or what is the definition in law of stalking? And how can people identify when they are being stalked?
Well, there isn't any legislation about stalking. There isn't any crime of stalking in Ireland. It comes under harassment and a few other kind of issues. But there isn't a law that writes out stalking is a crime. And that's what we're fighting for as well. Stalking would be more if somebody's consistent, if they're there all the time, if they're following you, if they're tracking you, if it's constant, it's stalking. You know if somebody rings you all the time, it's stalking. You know if somebody's following you, if they're outside your workplace, if they're, you know, beside you in college all the time, you just know, you feel it, you see it, you know it. And I think what happens to people is they get so frightened they don't go out anymore, or they feel they're imagining it, or they feel like they can't tell their friends anymore. Because often you get awful comments, you know, from people who say, he must really like you so if he's following me that much. If only I was so lucky. You get kind of blatant, stupid comments like that back to people, where in fact it is very serious and it is very frightening. And it does, you know, stop people in their tracks and prevent them from doing all the day-to-day things in their life.
I remember an interview I did with Sarah Benson of Women's Aid a couple of years ago, and we touched on this very topic, and also coercive control, where it can kind of seem as though the person is really into you and really wants your attention, but it doesn't really matter if the person who is getting all the attention doesn't want it. And it has to be that level of, you know, give and take, and both people have to be in a kind of consensual, I suppose, is the word there that I'm looking for. Is it hard for people, do you think, to identify when somebody crosses that line? And I'm sure people look for advice and are asking peers and maybe professionals, is this something that I should report? Should I take it a step further?
I think they just have to trust their gut. I think we are very used to, you know, people who have left relationships or intimate relationships where stalking kind of continues, where the guy might say, if you think you're going to get away from me or not. But we're coming across other forms of stalking where people don't actually know their stalker, or there's somebody who they work with who they might have never had a conversation with, or somebody who they were approached by years ago who they never followed up with or went out with, somebody who they least suspect, or could be a stranger who just likes to look at you and decides to keep following you. It's like, we do know. You don't know, even if you're going down the street and you might think there's a shadow, or you might think somebody's following you, and there mightn't be at all, but when it's consistent and when you see somebody, when you know it's happening, it's happening. And it's about trust yourself and get help, get protection, talk to the guards. What we would love is everybody report what happens to them. Even if there was no outcome, or even if you didn't want whatever outcome the guards might be presenting to you, at least it's documented and it's there. And that's what's really important, because for so long women and men in this country have put up with different forms of violence, different forms of abuse, different forms of people trying to stop them living their lives in the way they can. And we just want to put a stop to it and help those who are being stopped, help them, you know, talk about it and stop minimising and say, this isn't right, this is wrong, and let's do something about it. But first of all, instead of people kind of saying, well, how prevalent is it? Because we don't know. We want to find out how prevalent it is. Like, I'm in the centre here nearly 40 years, and I remember in 1983, when the figures came out from 1983, such as they were, there was something like 300 reports of sexual violence, that'd be rape, child abuse, the whole lot in the whole country. I think in Cork City and County, there was only something like 35. So we were told back then it wasn't an issue, it wasn't happening. There's no statistics, there's nobody speaking about it. It was totally minimised. And with stalking, we're just looking at the prevalence of it and asking people to fill in the survey and get in touch with us in stalkinginireland.ie. And we will talk to them and we will support them and we will give them advice or anything else they need.
And you touched on it earlier on, and I think it kind of ties into what you're saying there with how people are now coming forward more and more. And it is people like Una Ring and Eve McDowell, who we spoke to on the programme before, how they've come out, they've been brave enough to talk about their own experiences. They help people along in their journey, and people speaking out really does encourage more to come forward.
I think it humanises it. You know, it's like Rachel McBoy, who came out last week, who was a court case in Cork, you know, who was raped while somebody was videoing her in the street in Cork while she was being raped, and she came out. And we've had a lot of reaction from that, because I think when somebody comes out and speaks about their own experience, it normalises and it clicks a button, rather than kind of somebody talking academically or talking in practice, or this or this or this might or mightn't happen. When somebody comes out and says, this happened to me and this is what it was like, and please talk about it, it does make a difference. It does really help and encourage people to do something about what's happened to them. Because for so long, I think we're told, you know, leave it alone. You're cause more trouble by doing this. Maybe he doesn't mean it. Maybe he means no harm. Maybe he's not well. All this kind of stuff. So they've done a phenomenal kind of job by highlighting Ireland without a doubt. And we're just taking the next step to, you know, count, well, who else is it happening to?
Also worth pointing out that it does happen to both men and women, but the figures speak for themselves, though, that it is primarily women who suffer at the hands of men, but there are supports out there for men and women alike. The website is www.stalkinginireland.ie. Just remind us one more time, Mary, about how people can get online and fill out that survey, and are you looking for men and women also?
Absolutely. Like, I hope when you get a chance today now, you'll fill it out. And everybody in the station there will fill it out, because that's who we want. A whole variety of people, not those who might be interested or working in the area filling it out. We want people who may have never done a survey before just to fill it out. And they can't answer every question, that's fine. You know the way sometimes you do a survey and you think, God, I'm stuck here, and I'll shut it down and go back to it. Don't shut it down, just keep going and fill out as much as you can.
Okay, well, Mary Crilly, the head of the Cork Sexual Violence Centre, many thanks for joining us on the programme this afternoon. Good afternoon to you.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Kildare Focus with Owen Beattie.
All right, very shortly, we will be talking to Monica de Bath. She is an artist and a walk leader, because there's an event taking place in Rathangan at the Rathangan Bridge, taking a walk along the Blue Way this coming weekend. We'll get more information from Monica on that. But do keep your messages coming in to us to our Whitewater text and WhatsApp line, 0833 97 97 97. Email studio@kfmradio.com, or you can also call us 0459 01490. Now, coming up for the rest of your Friday evening, after 3 o'clock, we have K-Drive Classic Gold. That's with Ben Atkinson, playing great music from the 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s. Then K-Drive Proper with Paul Power between 4 and 7, driving you home, keeping an eye on traffic and travel from around the place as well. And then between 7 and 10, yours truly with the Irish music scene, playing the very best of homegrown talent, both old and new. Now, we're just having a little bit of trouble getting in contact with Monica de Bath in relation to that walk taking place in Rathangan, so I'll tell you a little bit about it. Creative Metal Rathangan, they're hosting an intercultural walking and drawing event along the Blue Way at Rathangan Bridge. So it takes place this coming Sunday at 12 noon, December 12th, and you meet at the Blue Way at Rathangan Bridge. And Monica, who's a local artist, she once worked as at the Arts Institute in Zimbabwe, and recently on an outdoor arts project with asylum seekers. She's going to lead the walk on Sunday. They are keen to explore the place, we're told, with local residents there and also people from around the county to hear stories about the culture. And also Lawrence Fulham, who's a local historian, and also a couple of other people will be there to tell stories about the local area, its wildlife, natural habitats, while walking and listening to the stories and places. They look forward to meeting you, they say, for the short walk. They offer drawing notebooks and pencils for those who like to draw, and families are welcome. Now, booking is essential, as I suppose it is with everything these days. The email address is creativerathanganmehal, and mehal is spelled M-E-I-T-H-E-A-L. So creativerathanganmehal@gmail.com. And as I say, 12 o'clock this coming Sunday, December 12th, on the Blue Way at Rathangan Bridge. creativerathanganmehal@gmail.com is the email address. Thanks to Caoimhe Harney for a great job on production.
Dare Focus with Owen Beattie.